Okay, we're, we, that is Bill Jones as interviewer, and Dewey Pucelle as the interviewee, are seated in the studio on December 4th, 1987, to do an interview as part of the Heritage Education Commission Oral History Project. Dewey, I think we ought to start off and just review your career a little bit. Has it always been in music?
Yes, it has, Bill. I graduated from Morehead State in 1952, and in instrumental music, and been in it, I guess, ever since then until my retirement 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And this has been teaching your primary.
Yes, I've been in teaching band and orchestra.
Uh-huh. Strictly instrumental.
Right. I have not been in the vocal field.
Yeah. And you were in how many different systems?
My first job was at Minoman, Minnesota, and I was there for 4 years. I left in 1957. To seek my master's degree, and which I did down at University of Iowa in Iowa City, and graduated there, and then came directly from there in 1958, I believe, yes, 58, yeah, I have to stop and think, to the Morehead Public School System. And then I stayed there in the Morehead System until my retirement in 1985.
And what was the range of responsibilities you had in the Morehead?
Well, I entered as a junior high school band director, and I left as a junior high school orchestra director, Bill. So whether
that's progress, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. But during that tenure, of course, I had responsibilities in the elementary buildings as well, and only the last 4, maybe 5 years, I don't recall exactly, that I moved from the band field to the orchestra field.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all instrumental music, and
Your principal instrument was trumpet.
Right.
Yeah. You did a lot of performing also.
Well, I did a lot of playing in local groups. Yeah, mm-hmm. I played in the symphony for many, many years, and as well as dance bands and things in the area. Right.
Well, we want to explore that a little bit later on. I think that certainly is an important part of the scene, this region. But now we're going to turn to some of the questions that the group that's responsible for this particular area of the project, questions that they developed, and pursue some of those before maybe we strike out on our own. First question is, explain how you developed your interest in this particular area of work. What started you in this direction?
I guess my attraction to music perhaps was rather from the family situation. My dad was a musician of sorts, and my older sisters, I have two older sisters, were both involved musically. And we happened to have an old cornet in the family, and that was back in the years when you didn't rush out and buy new instruments or new equipment. And so that is what I started on and had a reasonable amount of success. I had as my instructor back then, Leif Christensen.
Hmm. You lived in Morehead?
Though. Yes. I'm a local yokel here, native of Morehead.
Mm-hmm.
And Leif, of course, was at the Morehead Public School System for many, many years, and later moved to Concordia College in Morehead, where he conducted the band there, too, until his retirement. But he's the one that got me started in the instrumental field, and it seemed to be my forte all through school, and just a natural thing for me to follow as I went into college. And I guess that's really how I got my beginning on it.
Mm-hmm. And then you went to Morehead State for your, did we have a music major at that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Preston was chairman of the music department at that time. Let's see, I entered in 1948, I graduated, as I said, in 52 with a stint in the service in between. And Dan Preston was chairman as I entered, and H.D. Harmon was chair as I left, mm-hmm. graduating.
And you had a trumpet teacher during that time?
Yeah, Dr. Harmon mm-hmm. was a trumpet instructor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I suppose, did they have a pretty good band?
Yeah, Bert McGarity was a band director for three of my 4 or 5 years there. And he had a tremendous respect for him as a musician and as an individual, and he had played a very big influence in my life and in, I guess, you know, focusing in on music education mm-hmm. for my life.
I remember him. He was assistant conductor of the symphony.
Right.
When I was at Concordia. He was a clarinetist, I think.
Right. Wasn't he? Yeah. Excellent clarinetist, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you play in the symphony while you were in college?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I had a long tenure there. I don't remember how many years, but I think it was over 20 years, and counting my my college days, and then after I came back to the community from service and from graduate school and so on. Yeah, I've been in there for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about music within the Moorhead community, that is, the community and how it, the degree of support that you felt the various school activities enjoyed. Is Moorhead a community that's been basically supportive of music through the years, and has that been your experience?
I would definitely say yes. I think the community is fortunate in that it has had a long tradition of support for the arts in general. Whether it's unusual amount of support, I'm not sure, and not having lived anywhere else really, but it seemingly has flourished very well, and there's always been a support for an artist series of concerts that, you know, by professionals that have been brought in, as well as support for public school music, and then the presence, of course, of the two colleges, three colleges actually, in Fargo-Moorhead area, has been a real plus for the musical scene, I think, in general. But I guess I would have to attribute a lot of my interest in music to the STRAW program in the public schools. And Margaret Newton, who was an old, deceased now, was a music teacher for many, many years, and well-respected, along with Leif Christensen. I think that duo provided a real impetus for
oh, that was,
music,
of course,
education.
Those were two outstanding people.
Yeah,
they were really lucky.
Yeah.
I worked under both of them when I was at Concordia, and had a high respect for them both. You say you never did anything vocally, but I'll bet you Margaret Newton expected you to sing, didn't she?
Well, you know, it's a funny thing, Bill. No, I never did. I was not in the choir in public schools at all. And I often think back in these years and wonder why or how I escaped that. And not that I was trying to avoid it, but I was never really cornered to or pressured to be a part of it. And I don't really understand why. Not that I'm a great vocalist, but you know, normally instrumentalists are coerced into being part of the vocal program.
Well, so, as a matter of fact, very frequently instrumentalists become very valuable
right.
choral music people. As you think about the programs within the school system where you had a role, often a leadership role, who are some of the people that you remember who were very effective colleagues that really made a difference, you felt, as you were working there?
Well, there are a number of them, I'm sure. Lauren Busley, of course, in the band department at the high school for many years. I believe he's been retired now for, my goodness, 10, 12 years or more. I would say all of that, probably more than that. Certainly was a strong influence in the band department there and did an excellent job, always produced fine quality product. Vincent Policicchio in the string department at the public schools was always very strong in that program. And I think one of the real pluses at the Moore Public Schools, I speak from a biased point of view, but is the fact that they've always had a strong elementary music program. And this, I think, has borne some real fruit for not just the vocal department, but instrumental as well for the secondary programs as they've developed through the years. I think the system has historically been strong in that regard because of that strong elementary emphasis that has been prevalent.
It's a major investment, actually.
That's right.
There's no question about that. Having elementary vocal teachers in
each elementary
school.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of Minnesota schools, particularly back then, and I'm not sure that even today, that provide at least 20 minutes per day for every child in the public school system, taught by a specialist.
Yeah. I can't help but contrast this with California, where I just spent the year previous to this, and their music programs have just been absolutely riddled, mm-hmm. and they have very little music instruction now. And as a result, the college with which I was connected, they're really scrambling for people to participate in the performance groups because they're coming out of school systems where they've had mm-hmm. limited opportunities. So Moorhead certainly compares very favorably, all right, with that kind of situation. Are there others that you think?
Well, of course, I mentioned Leif Christensen during my...
You worked in the system while he was still...
No. He was at Concordia when I
when you came back
to town, as I recall, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, then there's Erling Lindy, who was a colleague of mine for many years in the public school system. He and I retired the same year, as a matter of fact, mm-hmm. as did Vince Policicchio. But Erling was an integral part of the staff for many, many years in junior high school bands. And in fact, my arrival upon the scene marked the first split of the two junior highs. Up until that period, there was only one junior high school in town, and Erling had the whole ball game to himself. Mm-hmm. And then when they expanded to North Building and South Building, then Erling took North Building and I was in the South Building. Mm-hmm. So he was certainly very active at that time, too.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about your playing in various groups. These are dance bands, more or less.
Primarily, yeah.
Okay. How often did you play? How often did you have a gig during those youthful years when you can stand to lose that much sleep?
I tell you, when you were playing in bands back then, as the kids today, I'm sure you know that was where all the action was. That's where you wanted to be, and that's where the fun was. So it was. They were fun times as well as hectic, obviously. But my first experience in really playing professionally on any kind of a professional level, semi-professional, really. Dates back into my early high school years when a local band in town, a fellow by the name of Lloyd Keller, Lyle Kelsman is his real name, and he went professionally, his name was Lloyd Keller. He was the first band that booked or hired me, I should say, for a professional job. And we played at the old Crystal Ballroom in Fargo. Mm-hmm. It's now has been torn down, but and from that point on, it just kind of grew, and I played in many, many bands throughout my college education years. My first summer of real concentrated playing was, it was summer between my junior and senior year in high school. A friend of mine, Del Herod, who was a student at Moorhead State for a couple of years and then transferred out to Pacific University. Fine musician, joined a band, a road band out of Omaha. It's called Vern Hall's Band. And this was a group that, among many, that was booked by a booking agency in Omaha. And we played, goodness sakes, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, Iowa, touched into Colorado a little bit, you know, the central states. And Del got the job first, and then when one of the trumpet players later left that summer, he talked them into calling me, and so I joined the band in Waterloo, Iowa, never forget, and played the rest of the summer with them, and that, of course, they had a sleeper bus, you know, and that was pretty big-time stuff, I tell you.
One-night stands, pretty much.
Oh, yeah, pretty much, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, I recall only one occasion where we had two nights in the same place.
And these were ballrooms?
Yeah, yeah, ballroom dance halls, you know.
Was this a big band sort of thing?
Yeah, it was about 10 pieces.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. And playing standard arrangements?
Yeah, stock arrangements that were published, you know. And there were a few special arrangements, they called them specials back then. And, but mostly, you know, printed stock arrangements and available to anybody who wanted to put a band together. And yet, there weren't that many people around really that could, you know, could successfully do that, put it together and make it go. So, and it was the time of the big band era, obviously, and that was a very popular medium, just as the rock bands and the country western bands are today. And so it was a great thrill, and I enjoyed the summer immensely. Of course, made all the sum of $55 a week, which was unheard of money at those times. out of that, of course, you had to pay your own meals and hotel whenever you stayed in the hotel, and so the end result wasn't too great. And we would run upon hard times occasionally. I recall Del and I, for example, we got into Omaha one night, and Vern Hall, the leader of the band, hadn't been paid for a couple of gigs or something, and he was hurting financially. And we were, Adele and I, and well, and other members of the band as well, were just downright broke. And so we got into Omaha that evening, and Vern's mother lives in town, and I think he would put the touch on her once in a while to bail him out. But that night, apparently, he was having problems. And so we were sleeping in the bus in a residential area in Omaha, and I remember getting very, very hungry. So Del and I went out into somebody's backyard garden and helped ourselves to carrots and tomatoes and peas and whatever we could find, and it tasted pretty good. But those are the bad times, and you forget about those generally, and the good times far outnumbered the bad. And there were some fine musicians and some very mediocre ones, and it was a good experience.
Now, when you started teaching, you continued this as a sideline too?
Okay. Yeah, to a lesser degree. My first job, they say, was in Manoomin, and the opportunities for performance there on a, you know, semi-professional level weren't too great. We did form what we called a director's band, made up of a batch of area band directors, and we had a good time. We played a few gigs here and there, but never really had that much opportunity. Then when I came back to Moorhead after my graduate work, trying to recall now the sequence of these bands, but I played for, well, I guess it was in my undergraduate years, I played with Ralph Mutchler's band in Fargo for a long time, and Paul Hansen's band. I think Paul's band was after I returned from graduate school, as I recall. Paul's band was, you know, a long fixture of Fargo scene. And Ralph Mutchler's band was, Ralph at that time was an NDSU student and has since gone on to teaching and music and so on. He was out in Washington State, I think, for a long time. He's a band director out there. But then there was Darryl Pagenaud's band, and they played in for a number of years, and that was, I guess that was during college. Tony Williams, another one. All of these names coming back now. And I'm afraid that the sequence of these things are out of sync here, because I'm not sure. when they occurred in my life, frankly, but...
Basically, these were relatively small big bands.
Right, yeah.
Well, in standard
arrangements. The Ralph Metzler group was a full-size...
It was.
Yeah, it was 16 mm-hmm. pieces sometimes, mm-hmm. And as was Paul Hansen's band, was a pretty good-sized band, but Tony Williams was smaller, and as was Daryl Paisno's, and...
Now, did you stay with it when, you know, the scene changed in the late 50s and early 60s and rock became more and more part of the scene? Did you stay with that change in style and play rock?
No, as a matter of fact, you know, it was a real gradual change and a continuing change, obviously, even today. You know, playing trumpet, there isn't a lot of rock opportunities.
No.
If you're a guitar player, drummer, or something, that's different. But as a trumpeter, there's not a lot of opportunity. And so, really, no, I think the gigs just became fewer and fewer, and you just kind of fade out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, you, I'm very much aware of the band that you pulled together for MSU's 4th of July celebrations. Was that strictly just for that occasion, or did they...
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting story. Orb Item is the one that was originally contacted for this MSU's old-fashioned 4th of July celebration. The very first one, and I'm not sure what year that was, but do you remember
that? That was in 1973.
73 was the first one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So at that time in town there seemed to be an abundance of trumpet players, and we of course had some constraints insofar as numbers we could hire for the amount of money that was available for the total band membership for that thing. And so Orb thought, well, why don't you conduct, Dewey? And we have enough trumpet players and we need another conductor and so on. So I said, fine, I'll do that, and we got it together, and I don't think we rehearsed or anything. We just met that afternoon and put some tunes together, and the announcer said, before we went on, he said, and I don't remember who that was, maybe it was you. I said, what do you call yourselves? And we kind of looked at each other, and he said, gee, I don't know, let's call it the 4th of July Band. So he introduced us, and then I introduced the band, and just for lack of anything else, I said, and my name is Johnny Flagg. And it stuck ever since, and it's been an ongoing thing every year. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, it's definitely kind of a fixture as far as that celebration now. It's, let's think a little bit about your appearances with the symphony. Was that strictly an amateur group when you started with no pay? Or
well, as I recall, Bill, I think there was a pay scale that was very, very low, and how it was based or how it was devised, I don't recall. I'm sure there were different levels. I think as students, as I recall, I don't think students were paid.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know, teachers and adults in the community and so on were gotten some remuneration, but I don't think students were paid anything. And then later, that was changed, of course, and I don't know what the salary schedule is now. I sit on the board and I don't even know, but... I know that there is a reasonable fee that is paid.
They certainly approximate the union scale now for the professional members.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that was an enjoyable experience, and I played third trumpet for for all those years, and then when Mark Fasman came to town, you know, there's always. Was in the trumpet section was Dr. Harmon and Yvonne, his wife Yvonne, who played the second trumpet part. And my being a student of Doc's, of course, I guess opened the door for me to be a part of the trumpet section, and for which I was grateful. But I played, you know, all those years as third trumpet player. And then when the Harmons left, let's see, Bob Hansen came back from, he was conductor at Milwaukee for a while.
Yeah, he was at the University of Milwaukee. Wisconsin. Yeah. Milwaukee, right.
And of course, he's a fine trumpet player. And Sigvald Thompson was still conducting at that time. So Bob came back and played the principal trumpet part. And I'm trying to recall who was playing second trumpet, but I don't right now. But I know I wasn't. I was playing third. At any rate, then very shortly thereafter, additional trumpet instructors were hired in the local colleges. And then also at that time, Bob Hansen reverted from band director to orchestra director and slipped into the conductorship of the symphony. And then people like Mark Fasman came to town, who was a trumpet instructor at MSU here. And there was a Joe Doxey at NDSU, an excellent trumpet teacher and performer. And a Steve Dimmick that followed him, and then Russ Pesla at Concordia, trumpet instructor and band director. At any rate, there were fine trumpet players coming out of the ears around here, and I felt rather conspicuous occupying that third chair when there were people like Mark Fasman, who was just a really outstanding performer, who would love to have been a part of that organization. And so I just kind of bowed out.
Oh, yeah.
And my own accord,
gave them a chance.
Yeah, it's time for the younger generation.
Yeah. And the symphony, then you watched it grow. When you first start, was there a lot of public support of it when you were first started? Were there good crowds? Where did they
generally
perform anyway?
Well, they used to perform in the old Fargo Central High School auditorium. That was their main performance place. And of course, that burned down sometime in the 50s, I'm not sure when, or early 60s. And then they moved to, I remember they played a concert or two in the supposedly at that time it was new Fargo Civic Auditorium, which was kind of a disaster.
They actually did try to do concerts there.
Yeah, I remember playing 1812 Overture there.
Well, that's probably the only case it'd be appropriate for that setting.
But as it was soon discovered, of course, that was pretty hopeless acoustically. And I think at that point they moved to the Field House at Concordia and have been there ever since.
Mm-hmm.
But the experiences that back in playing in symphony are many. I recall Bert McGarity, who was clarinetist and band director at MSU at that time, who used to tell the story about, the orchestra wasn't always so strong, and it had its weak sections, as is not terribly unusual. And Bert used to tell the story about they're playing in a concert, and Sigvald was conducting, and somewhere in the middle of some piece, and what it was they were playing, I don't know. Various sections of the orchestra got mixed up or got lost or something. And Bert, being the consummate musician, as at least he would like us to believe, and I think he was generally, would point his clarinet and play vigorously in this direction at the trumpet section. And over here he'd play the second violin part and fiddle on that and then point his clarinet to the percussion or something. And after the concert was over and they finally got that piece together, and that's obviously all through Bert's efforts. And after the piece was over, he was heard the remark, he says, "My God, it takes a lot of effort to play principal clarinet in this orchestra." He had a great sense of humor himself, of course, and a great storyteller, but I'm sure that's partially, if not all, true, because, there were lots of sections in the group that weren't real strong, and the literature that Sigvald chose to perform was very challenging, and
he didn't compromise.
No, he didn't, and that's to his credit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting. And there was always a time when they're short of various sections, you know, instrumentalists in various sections.
Hard to find a bassoonist, I'm sure.
And that was one critical one. As a matter of fact, Bill, one season I played second bassoon in the orchestra.
Right.
This was when I was still in college, and I had taken, the usual instrumental techniques classes, and I had really enjoyed playing bassoon. And got as proficient as one can get, I think, in a period of a quarter or two,
yeah.
You know, with that kind of exposure and training. So that, I guess I had a reasonable, passable sound in any way that that could be utilized in a rear pinch, which is what the case was. Well, and then, no, I guess I take that back because I've had even further training, Bill. I must impress you with the fact that I played bassoon also in an army band. And the concert band there, of course, had trumpet players coming out of their ears also. So they had these two brand new bassoons sitting in the cases untouched that were equipped, the band had been equipped with. And the warrant officer suggested, well, if you've played these things, why don't you try one in concert band? And so I did, and I did gain some proficiency on it.
Now, you had some military experience.
Yeah, I guess I left that on. Yeah.
And
yeah.
That was in a band?
Well, right, yeah.
Now, as you look back over the music scene, particularly in Moorhead, let's see, you came there in 58, is that it?
1958.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are there recollections that you have of the impact of any political or economic conditions? I mean, it'd be easy enough to say, well, if you'd been teaching during World War II, you could talk about how it was during that time, because obviously that was a very difficult time and teachers gone and so on. And I don't think we can, there are quite analogous economic and political circumstances that would impact during your years. But were there occasions where there were outside influences that really came to bear and made a difference as far as?
Boy, you know, that's a tough one, Bill. As I stop to think about that, you know, just off the top of my head, I don't recall any particular events that had really a large impact.
How about unionization of the faculty? Did that make any difference as far as your program is concerned?
By unionization, you're talking about?
Well, collective bargaining.
Oh. You mean like within the schools?
And working within a contract, you know. After all, there's a negotiated contract now, which defines workload and things like that. Does that make any difference?
Well, as far as the actual teaching is concerned, possibly. I think I got in at the very, and as far as teaching, I got in at the very beginning kind of the era of contracts, really. I mean, I'm sure they existed before, but not to the fine degree that certainly not as they are now, where everything is nailed down. But whether that had a real influence on the fine arts movement or music movement or anything, I'm not so sure. I would say that perhaps politically, if anything, has impacted on the music scene or the fine arts scene in general is where, you know, the establishment of the Foundation for the Arts, National Endowment for the Arts, those kinds of things. And when grants became available and for the first time, which hadn't happened, I don't think, prior to that, that's when programs begin to blossom, community programs.
Right. How about technological changes?
Well, they certainly have been a batch of them, and insofar as, again, from the perspective of impacting the musical scene in the Fargo-Moorhead area, for example, it's been a gradual thing. just as it has been in the industry. You know, the advent of all the electronics and all these things. I guess it's been so gradual that it's not... I guess I don't have a handle on it, Bill. I really don't...
Well, actually, it's only, seems to me, in the pop scene that where you really have an impact there. If you had a jazz, for example, a jazz band, then you'd be dealing with a lot of changes. I mean, the degree of amplification, if nothing
that
else.
That in itself, that's right. Yeah, that certainly is a big effect. I guess I was thinking more in the concert realm of the thing when you were talking about it.
That's right.
But in the pop field, there's no question about it. That has really had a monstrous impact on it. And any pop group that you hear now, every individual performer has their own mic, if not one, maybe two.
Yeah.
And
the person who really dictates the sound more than anybody else is the sound man.
That's right, and he is just as much an artist, I think, as the performers.
Yeah, has to be.
That's right.
He'll kill him.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing, the volume levels.
I think it'd be interesting if you thought through and maybe gave us a little perspective as to... what some of the satisfactions have been, and maybe what some of the disappointments have been, as far as your years in music.
Well, there's kind of two facets to that, I think, Bill. One is the teaching, you know, my experience in the teaching field, education, and aside from that, my experience as a performer. And I really don't count myself as a performer because I'm not that proficient at anything, but. But, you know, you still have experiences that I think help you to draw conclusions on things. As far as the education thing is concerned, I guess, you know, I speak with many biases, but I've always felt that education in general has, in this country, been shortchanged. And I'm not alone, I guess, when I say that, in those feelings. But it seems to me that one of the more important activities that goes on in this country, in this living, in this life, is the handling of our young people and how they're trained, how they're brought up. And yet... the emphasis and the resources that are made available to those who do those things really are quite secondary in the eyes of government, of the powers that be, mm-hmm. so to speak. I think that is improving, that kind of thing is improving, but it has a long way to go. And I don't speak from the point of view that the teaching profession as a whole is without blame. We all have problems, and each profession, I think, needs a certain amount of policing its own ranks. But I guess that would be one area that has always crossed my mind as being something that really isn't right, that there should be more emphasis, more importance given to the act of teaching,
mm-hmm.
and to the responsibilities of a teacher, and the fact that they are dealing in terms of truth, of morality, of I'm not doing a very good job explaining all this, I'm afraid, but these are the essentials of life, and if we are leaving them to chance or not doing what we can to do to enhance every possible method and means of improving those kinds of things, we are really selling ourselves short, mm-hmm. as a nation, I think, as an individual. Along with that, and aside to that, is I have a bias which I might share with you, Bill. Have you taught in public schools?
Yes.
Yes, you have, so you're aware. I find a little resentment on my part of as I watch education, as I watch and look at college education, college teaching positions as compared to public school, that the freedom and the prestige and the salaries in general too, not always but in some cases, that is given to the post-secondary levels are sometimes out of proportion to what the secondary and public school salaries are, and teachers' prestige and all this sort of thing has had. And what to do about that is something I don't want to cover now, I guess. You know, I guess it's just something I felt all along. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of public school people do. You know, mm-hmm. I think of, and you hear of extreme cases, I'm sure, in the college ranks of teaching where professors or assistant professors or whatever their ranks are, who have, you know, 5-10 hours of teaching a week, go on a sabbatical study abroad and so on. And these kinds of opportunities are necessary and certainly essential to good education and to good teaching, I think. But in comparison, the amount of effort and expended, I think, in general, it's dangerous to generalize like this, I know. But you know, comparing secondary to post-secondary teaching, there's certainly a lot of room for discussion. Mm-hmm. I'll put it that mm-hmm. way.
No, I think you've got a point. What to do about it is another question.
Yeah. Well,
it relates to your first point.
Yeah, that's right. Then this business about reaction to performance, some high points or low points or something. I guess performance, musical performance, is comparable to any artistic endeavor. If you feel that you're doing something and doing it well and doing it as the Spirit helps you to move to do, it's a tremendous feeling, and it's a feeling of great satisfaction and reward, and makes all of the efforts and the sweat and so on that you've had to undergo to arrive at that point worth it all. I haven't had many of those experiences, Bill. You know, as far as performance is concerned, I'm just a very mediocre player, and as far as my trumpet playing is concerned, it's still something very high in my mind that I attempt to do and work at, because I still enjoy it.
Sure.
But,
well, there's a certain satisfaction as a director, too, to see kids all of a sudden blossom.
It really is,
To do
watch
better
them.
Than they ever had any right to do, mm-hmm. and to watch them grow. And even though artistically your junior high groups aren't going
to
send thrills up and down your spine just from the sheer sound, nevertheless.
No, it's a great thrill to watch them move from point A to point B in their development. And that's something that is always a real rich reward in teaching, not just in smell music, I guess, but any kind of teaching where you can see the progress and watch
right.
it happen.
Sometimes the progress is more evident there than it is in some other
areas.
That's
true.
There's no question.
That's very true.
So you watch a youngster all of a sudden be able to handle something this year that they couldn't even touch the year before, and so on.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. I think before we close, I'd like to do two things. One is to make sure that if you could think of things that we haven't covered that would be important from a historical point of view, we ought to give you that opportunity. Are there some things that we ought to get on this tape that we haven't covered?
Well, I tell you, I think we've done a pretty good job, Bill, as far as the community is concerned, and my part in it, which has been very small, but no, I can't think of anything additional that I...
Okay. And we ought to get on record what you're doing now, too.
Oh.
you retired, you said, from music, and so...
Yeah. Well, I'm a county commissioner. I was elected to that position in the final year of my teaching, and my present term will end this coming year, the end of next year. And I hope to... it's been an enjoyable experience. It's been a real contrasting experience from what I have been doing in the classroom. And it's been a very big learning experience, but it's been very rewarding. And at this point, I think I might run again at the end of this term. Who knows what might happen between now and then, but...
You were very successful running against an incumbent, and that was a very successful initial political effort.
Very pleasant surprise.
Well, this goes to show you that somehow or other, in your years in the community, you managed to earn some respect. That was good.
One of the things that was enjoyable about that was actually the campaigning. The area which the district which I represent is that area that surrounds the South Junior High School building, practically, which of course is the roots of all the students from that I've had for many, many years. And so it was surprising and pleasant to, as I go around door knocking, and find how many people I knew and remembered me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that must have been satisfying.
Yeah.
Well, very good. I guess we can say that we have completed this particular
process. Well, I thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.